Most employees want to do really well, and most of them can make good decisions if they have the same knowledge as you. But what happens most of the time is that we withhold all this knowledge from people, not on purpose, but because we're lazy and we just don't feel like relaying that knowledge. But if we can get it all out of our heads, then we can empower people to make better decisions, not just in their role, but for the company overall. How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build. Have you ever bought a product and felt like during the entire sales process, everything was amazing? They were super talkative to you. They were like constantly calling you, messaging you. The marketing was all over the place. You were watching all their content. And then the moment that you bought that product, it was like freaking crickets. And the thing itself that you bought was nothing like the expectations that they set during the sales process. Most employees, that's the same thing that happens to them. They read this beautiful job description that you found on Google and made up to sound amazing. And then they hear about this company that's like reaching for the stars and it's grandiose. And then they talk to these people who sell them on why this is such a great opportunity. And they come into the job and it is the complete opposite. I want you to think of your worst employee, the person who's lazy. They don't show up on time. You know, they don't actually get their work done. They're inefficient. What if I told you that that person was actually your fault that they acted that way? Why? Because you hired and trained them. So today's going to be about all the things that happen after the moment you hire someone to ensure that they're successful and you retain them. I know years ago when I was first starting a business, I didn't really understand how to truly properly onboard, manage, and train people. I felt that way too. There would be days where I felt like, gosh, my team sucks. And it wasn't until I really took a look inside to realize if my whole team sucks, or even some of those people suck, I'm the one who brought them in, I'm the one who onboarded them, and I'm the one who trained them. So that must mean that I have a skill deficit that I need to work on rather than constantly pointing the finger at them. So if you've heard any of my other videos where I talk about how to go from being a small business to a bigger business, when you're smaller, there's a lot of inconsistency. And then as you get bigger, what we want to do is we want to get more consistent and more predictable. And a lot of people, when you think about getting consistent, you think of making sales, you think of driving revenue, you think of consistent marketing and bringing in leads. But what you have to remember is on the other side of that, there are the employees that are pushing the buttons, coming up with the creative, recording the creative, making the sales, closing the calls. And so in order to get consistency and grow your company, you also want consistency in the teams that you have. And something that we've seen across the portfolio, because we have a portfolio of companies at acquisition.com, is that many people in the beginning have a lot of inconsistency in terms of different departments. And so one company in particular had tons of inconsistency in sales. And so we were hitting a ceiling at like $300 to $4,000 a month. And this was a B2B service business. And for some reason, we couldn't get past it. It was like one quarter, we were at $300,000 a month. The next quarter, we're at 350, then we're back to 300. We're like, guys, it's been three quarters. Why can't we get consistency with sales? We added more salespeople. We've been hiring more salespeople. You know, we've been training them up. We've tightened our training department. Like, what's going on? And we took a look because we said, okay, obviously adding more sales reps, that's not going to solve this. And so what was really interesting is that when we took a deeper look, it was really obvious. It wasn't that we were having trouble acquiring new sales reps. It was that our churn of sales reps was so high, acquiring them couldn't outpace the churn. Just like businesses that sell people and forget about the customer thereafter, continue to lose customers until they basically vanish into nothingness or get such a bad reputation that people stop buying from them. The same goes for employees. You can't just hire a person and then hope that they do well, cross your fingers, close your eyes, and hope that they're going to perform. So the same things that you want to do after you sell somebody something are the same things you want to do after you hire somebody. So just like you still have to fulfill all the promises you made during a sale, you want to fulfill on all the expectations you set during the interview process. So there's really three things that go into fulfilling on your promises made when you've hired somebody. And this will give you the best chance of success in terms of when you bring someone to the organization, not thinking they're going to turn out 3 days later. Those three pieces are onboarding, expectations, and context. So let's start with expectations. Expectations are simply the verbalization of how you would like something done. So let's look at a common example. When you tell your kid to make their bed, it's like, Johnny, go make your bed. He might make the bed and it might look like, right? Because he made the bed, but it's all frivolled, like the pillows are everywhere. It's like, technically it's made, but it doesn't look that great. Or you could say, Johnny, go make your bed like a five-star hotel would make your bed. And then it looks nice. The sheets are all spread out. There's no wrinkles. The pillows are fluffed and it looks great. That's the difference in how we verbalize expectations to people. And I think that a lot of opportunity is lost to help bridge the gap between understanding and ignorance with employees because we don't properly understand how to verbalize expectations. And what you have to understand is that when most people come in, even when you hire someone who's experienced, they're still playing the game based off the rules of their last job. So unless told otherwise, when somebody comes into your organization, they're going to keep doing what worked in their last job, and they're going to keep not doing what didn't work in their last job. And so until you set expectations that are different and then reinforce those expectations, they're going to just continue doing what they've always done because it's worked well enough for them to have that last job. The easiest way to do this is to first set the expectation of what you want, to verbalize it, to add it in the job description, to explain it to them, and then to follow up with encouraging them when they are meeting expectations. Unfortunately, what happens most of the time is that a company hires a person. They sell the person on this big, grandiose vision of how amazing this role is, how amazing the company is, because they're just desperate for this person to say yes. They tell them they get flexible work, working hours, oh, you don't need to answer on weekends, all these things. And then what happens is that person comes in and then they see, oh, you do expect me to work until late at night. Oh, you do want me working weekends. Oh, people aren't that nice here. Oh, you do want me to take on this huge project that wasn't part of my role. And even if that person might have agreed to those things on the front end, the fact that you didn't set the expectations properly, now it's a negative. So you've taken a neutral experience and you've made it a negative simply not by letting them know ahead of time. And so that is what most companies do. Now, the goal, in my opinion, is to keep them above the line, which is there's the line which is neutral. They're just getting what they expected. There's below the line, which is where most companies go, which is now they're feeling badly about the role. They're regretting their decision. They're feeling like, maybe I should have stayed at my last job. Now, what do you do to get above the line? Well, to stay at the line, we want job expectations to match job conditions, right? So what you say the role is exactly what the role is. Then we get someone who's neutral. They're happy they made a decision in the sense that they're happy that things are the way they expect. It is predictable, which often people want. If job expectations are better than job conditions, then you get somebody who's discontent. They regret their decision. They want to go back to their prior job. But if you can create job conditions that are better than job expectations, that's when you get somebody who's really excited about the decision and feels really great about the decision that they made to join your company. So the question is, you can do one of two things. You can either lessen the expectations you set. So you can actually make the job sound worse than it is. I'm not saying a ton worse. I'm saying 5% worse. Or you can increase conditions once they come in. So you could say these are the expectations, and then you could find a way to over-deliver on how great the job is. In my opinion, the best thing to do is to set expectations 5% worse than they actually are. For the sake of eliminating employee churn, if you want to eliminate churn, we want to at least match expectations to conditions. Okay, so here are the five things that I do to create the bridge between what they understand and what is reality. The first is an accurate and well thought out job description. Guys, this sounds ridiculous, but like I literally did a training today talking about job descriptions, how I update them all the time, how I use them for things. This shouldn't be a piece of paper that's just sitting there. It can be a reference point, an agreement that we say, this is the agreement of what you're going to do on the job and the agreement of what I'm going to hold you accountable to as a company. And so having an accurate job description can accurately portray if this job is something they want or not. If they click on the ad for this job description, they're looking for what you've listed there, not something 50% different. And so if they come in and it's completely different than the job description, that right there is a negative. The second is consistently repeating the same message in every interview. So one thing that I want to make sure is done in every interview is we set expectations. What does the business do? And what does this role do within the business? And I always make sure, especially on the final interview, I still do that. Okay, I want to make sure you really understand, what does our business do? And what does your role do within this business? Because I want them to understand how their role connects with other pieces of the business and have an accurate depiction. And I want to know that we've said it not once, not twice, but minimum three times to the person. They really get it. They're crystal clear on what needs to happen. The third piece is setting 30, 60, 90 day goals. So really what these are, and the way that you can do it can be very collaborative with somebody, is they're really just the agreements of the progress that's going to be made within that time period. So often what I like to do is I like to collaborate with somebody on this. Because if I really want someone to come in and have autonomy over their role, am I just going to push work at them and say, this is what you do? Or am I going to say, hey, this is what I'm thinking makes the most sense and can be accomplished in this amount of days. But hey, I'm not a creative director or a director of people or a director of customer success. So I don't know if this is possible. Do you think these timelines, these things are possible? And so if we can set expectations before they even come in of what we want to accomplish in 30, 60, and 90 days, then they know what to expect and we create predictability in their mind. And then when we've created predictability, they feel better about making the decision. And then when they come in and the predictability is matched with reality, it's like what I predicted was going to happen is happening, you create even more security in their job. The fourth thing that you want to do is you want to discuss problems ahead of time. What you don't want to have happen is that you explain all the things they're going to do, but you don't explain the problems that are currently going on in the department or that their role would be solving. And so they come in and they're going to be doing the activities you outlined, but there's problems that exist that they didn't know about. And so it feels like a negative because they weren't aware. So instead, you want to think through, what are the problems that this person is going to observe when they come into this role in the company? And how can I let them know about those ahead of time and maybe even start collaborating with them on how they could solve them or how we could solve them together? Hey guys, a quick break to tell you that if you'd like to see more content from me that isn't just listening to my voice, you can go on and check out my YouTube channel as well. Just search Layla Hormozi and you'll see me in my face. Thanks again for listening and let's get back to the show. And then the last place is a proper new hire orientation. So when I say new hire orientation, just like you onboard a customer for a product, you want to onboard an employee for a job. And so there's probably two pieces to this, which is a general onboarding, where you're giving them contextual knowledge of the business, which we're going to go over shortly, and then a technical onboarding, which is how you onboard them to this role specifically within the business. So the second thing that we want to do, now that we've covered setting expectations, is we want to cover context. What is the context somebody needs coming into the company to be successful? Context is not memorization. Context is comprehension. Context is the circumstances that create the job. Okay, follow me here. What circumstances does this person need to know about in order to do the job well? Why does this job exist? What problems created this job? What circumstances created the need for this job? So what context do they need to know about to do the job exceedingly well? So what you really want to be doing here is zooming out and not saying, what is the job? But you want to be telling them, why does this job exist? Because just like telling people, why does this business exist, gives them a greater, more holistic perspective of which to make decisions, telling them why this job exists does the same thing. Building a department to fix a KPI versus building a department because you're going to sell the company versus building a department because the other department is weak. Why are we building a finance department? Did the outsource finance not work? Does the in-house work well? There's so many different reasons that you might say hire somebody to build a finance department. So explaining to them why you're hiring them is just as important because they can also help you and become a partner in solving any of those problems. And they might even have a different perspective than you think. I one time brought in a controller and I said, listen, I'm going to bring you in and I need you to build the finance department. And he's like, well, why do you need me to go do that in this company? And I said, well, because we're with this outsourced company, they suck, blah, 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 blah. So I need you to build the department. And he said, Layla, why don't we just get them with a different company? And I was like, oh, yeah, we could do that too. And so oddly enough, and funny enough, he still became their controller and then outsourced the lower level work to this company and then was able to help more with the strategy. And so if you give people context as to why the job exists, they're more likely to help you in a strategic way and help you solve problems, not just from the surface level, but from the root cause. So there's really two kinds of context. There is company-specific, and then there's role-specific context. So company-specific context. Why does this company exist? Where is this company going? What are the values of this company? How does this company behave? How do we hire people? How do we fire people? How do we hold people to expectations? What are our goals? What are we focused on this year? What are we focused on this quarter? Who are the leaders in this company? Who are the people that make decisions? How does the company celebrate? How does the company improve? How does the company learn? And what are our philosophies around things like pay, benefits, et cetera? Those are all company-specific context pieces. And so when you're thinking about building out an onboarding for somebody, they need to know all those things. I know it sounds like Wow, that's so much. I know. This is why building a company is hard, is a lot. But if you can say, for example, so what I've done is I've created what I call like our vision deck. And that deck I update every quarter. And then every quarter I can give that to HR. And then they can put that into our onboarding so that people can go through that deck and they get all the company context plus some more. Now, on the other side, you have role-specific context. Okay, what is role-specific? So it's going to be the job description. It's going to be, what are the expectations of the department? So what KPIs do we track of this department that you're in? What's the current workflow that this job adheres to? What systems are we using for this department? What cadence of meetings do we have? What KPIs is this role held to? And what technology do we use to get the job done? Those are all role-specific, meaning not everybody in the company is going to need that context to be successful, but this person will. So a great way that you can do this is, let's say you have less than 20 people, and let's say you don't have an HR department that can do onboarding for you. I think that one of the best things the founder can do is do the company context onboarding. So when you have a smaller team and say you don't have a lot of leaders in place, it makes sense that you meet with the newest people on the team who are going to be the ones that set the tone for everybody else. They're the first leaders that come in. You meet with them and you tell them, what's the vision? What's the mission? Here's the quarterly goals. And you run them through those things. Now, if you're bigger and you do have, say, an HR department or someone who's head of people and you have functional leaders, then it makes sense that they then learn how to do that themselves. And that would be the first thing I would focus on, is that when I'm bringing somebody in, I'm going to give them global context before I give them local context. Global means company, local means role specific. Now, in terms of role specific, that is what you want to start diving into after they understand the greater context of the company. So a lot of people jump into role specific, but then you know what happens? People make bad decisions. Why do they make bad decisions? Because they don't have context into which to make good decisions. Most employees want to do really well, and most of them can make good decisions if they have the same knowledge as you. But what happens most of the time is that we withhold all this knowledge from people, not on purpose, but because we're lazy and we just don't feel like relaying that knowledge. But if we can get it all out of our heads, then we can empower people to make better decisions, not just in their role, but for the company overall. The last piece to ensuring that you can successfully retain talent and employees is really onboarding. And so what onboarding, philosophically, how I see it, is that onboarding should mirror the future of the role. So a lot of the times, onboarding and the way that you manage somebody during onboarding is very different than you manage them for the rest of the time that they're with you. And that's why a lot of people can make it through the first 30, 60, or 90 days, but they can't make it thereafter, because then their behavior changes because your behavior has changed. So I think what you have to do is think through, what is the environment that this person is going to be operating in? Are they going to be doing the same thing every day? Are they going to have a lot of support? Or are they going to be doing different things every day and they're not going to have a lot of support? You want the onboarding to mirror how much support you're going to be giving them later on. And I think that communication versus skill development and support are different things. And so when you're bringing someone in, what you don't want to do is you don't want to set the expectation that you're going to be holding their hand the entire way, making sure they're on time, reminding them of things, writing reports for them. So what a lot of people do is they build out this like really beautiful onboarding for like 1 week, and then they just throw them into the fire after that. And in reality, if the reality of the job is like you need somebody who can just deal with the fire, then tell them that from the beginning, onboard them that way, basically have them self-onboard, and then set that expectation, hire for that. But what a lot of people do is they kind of sugarcoat it, and then they bring somebody in who needs more assistance. And then after a week or two, they're like, I can't do this anymore. This is all I've got. And then that person flounders. But what you actually want to be able to do is to match the onboarding with what the role is going to look like thereafter. Because then that person has proper expectations set. Oh, this is how much I'm going to communicate with these people. This is how much they're going to help me with this. This is how much support I'm going to get here. This is what it's going to look like. And so if that person is going to have a lot of support, then give them a lot of support in onboarding. If that person isn't going to have a lot of support, then give them less support in onboarding. It sounds simple, but it's important, because what it could feel like, it could feel like what some relationships are like, which is when somebody's dating somebody. And in the beginning, they'll do anything for them. They'll drop everything. They'll cancel all their plans with friends. They don't even have friends anymore. And then as soon as they get married, or they're in a longer relationship, or they move in together, then they add back in all this other stuff. And then suddenly, it actually is seen as a negative. But you didn't even know that they were just not doing that in the beginning because they wanted to put on their best face for you, right? They want to be the best version of themselves, but really they just want to appease you. And the same happens in onboarding. It's basically we say, I can't be doing all these other things that I do as founder and CEO because I need to onboard this person. So I'm going to literally be with them all day, every day. I'm going to do all this stuff. But it's like, what if instead you approached it with like, here's how much time I have to give you. Here's what I'm going to expect you to do on your own. Here's what I need from you. I have time to do these things. I don't have time to do these things. And you just set proper expectations from the get-go. Then they have a much better experience later on because that's how you're always going to operate, right? You can't fully dedicate your entire career to just training people 24/7. At least most people can't. And so to do that in the beginning and then take it away is seen as a negative.